broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Pendry.
All I can think of is that three-eyed fish on the Simpsons series.
Yeah, I think about, you know, the marine life. I think
the clubs have reached a decision on the site of Super Bowl 48.
Are you a don't you?
We need 6,000. We need 3,000 across the board.
I like Wiener.
Who said that?
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch and the Looking Glass. Ooh, the Looking Glass. Every night here until 1 o'clock out on the West and 4 a.m. on the East. Well, we're going to tell you 9 chain restaurant meals you probably should stay away from. Plus, a teacher is in trouble for allowing her students to dress in Klan outfits. Now, why would that be? And we're also, next hour, going to be talking with Raj Fanin about the problems in the Gulf. Mr. Fanin is a businessman working in the consulting business for engineering firms. And we'll discuss, among other things, why Arabs drill for oil better than Americans. And I'll leave that to your own imagination as to how far that is going to go. 8778, also, I think he's going to be talking with us about how nationalizing the oil industry is the best way to go. 877-876-PHIL, our website, philhenryshow.com, live streaming video and audio every day, every night, on demand. On demand. So you can go there, you can watch the streaming video and audio right now if you'd like to, or you can, tomorrow, download the audio. You can watch the video on demand anytime, day or night, and download the audio onto your iPod, and you're ready to rock and roll. So that's philhenryshow.com. And again, we appreciate all of the behind-the-scenes work that was done by our tech guys tonight to get us up and rocking and rolling. Something back east blew up. I don't know. 15 ways to predict a divorce. I thought maybe you guys would like to get into this one.
You should have read this before you got divorced.
Why don't you shut up about my divorce, okay?
Man, the first time you're talking on the show, what are you talking about? Well, he showed me the thing.
You know, that's a good point, Robert. The first time you open your mouth and you got to start talking about my divorce.
Well, did you read about it?
Read about what? My divorce?
Yeah.
Where? In a newspaper?
No, in these ways.
Don't grab my news copy. No, I didn't. Just listen to this, bud, okay? Because as far as marriage goes, I don't know whether or not you're a candidate or likely material. And if you do get married, who is it, Vivienne?
Yeah.
Yeah, God help her. All right, you can't guarantee the longevity of a marriage, but what you can do is play the odds. Researchers have studied marriage success rates from nearly every conceivable angle. How about that? And what they found is that everything from smoking habits to what state you live in can predict how likely it is that your union will survive. Smoking habits? Well, how I'd probably... How do you smell? Maybe that's really what they're talking about. Do you smell bad? If you smell bad, that's going to have some... Really? Yeah. Oh, wow. I never would have figured that. Bad breath. Here are 15 ways to gauge whether your marriage is in for the long haul or on the fast track to Splitsville. Number one, 15 ways, okay? You guys that are happily married, listen to these, and by the end of this list, you'll be ready to commit suicide. And those of you who've already had a divorce or in the situation that many of us find ourselves in, you know, just another statistic. Just another statistic. That's all we are, aren't we? Boy, oh boy. Well, anyway, you can listen to this list, and then you can find out whether any of this stuff applies to you. If you're a married American, your marriage is between 40 and 50% likely to end in divorce. How about that? If you're a married American, your marriage is likely, 40 to 50% likely, to end in divorce. After peaking at 50% in the 80s, the national divorce rate has dropped steadily. But still in all, if you're a married American, then that's where it's at, see?
What were you saying about your marriage?
Well, I was just getting kind of wistful about it. You know, I was thinking about back in the day when everything... The hell is this?
It's just mood music.
Get out of here with your mood music. In any event, so if you're married, it's a 40 to 50% chance you're going to get a divorce. Number two, how's that make you feel? Great. Number two, if you live in a red state, a conservative state, you're 27% more likely to get divorced than if you live in a blue state. Maybe that's because red state couples traditionally marry younger, and the younger the partner, the riskier the marriage. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the states with the lowest median age at marriage are Utah, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Oklahoma. And those are all red states. So therefore, you are more likely. I don't think the red state has anything to do with it. Red, what, rural state? Is that what you're saying? National Vital Statistics Report 2003. So if you marry young, you're more likely to get a divorce. That's basically what they're saying. All right, forget about whether you're living in a red state or not. There's bound to be some young couple living in a blue state right now, and they're saying, well, I guess we're okay. Will you turn that off, man?
I thought it was very mood-like.
It ain't mood-like.
It's very poignant.
What's poignant about Tainted Love by Soft Cell? Now, if you live in a red state and you're... What are you doing?
I just want to see if it's poignant.
Get it out of here. So, in other words, if you marry young, there's a chance that you're going to get a divorce because you're young. And you know what they say about young love? I don't know. You're young and you're dumb. Which would be a very good, you know, sitcom. Or actually, it'd be a good soap opera sitcom. Young and Dumb. If you argue with your spouse about finances once a week, your marriage is 30% more likely to end in divorce than if you argue with your spouse about finances less frequently. Okay? Money woes kill marriages. Now, that should not be news. That's a pretty standard piece of state-of-the-art information on marriage. Financial problems, money problems are an enormous strain on marriage. This has been true. It's been something well-known, I should say, in the literature for a long time. The same study also found that couples with no assets at the beginning of a three-year period are 70% more likely to divorce with no assets at the beginning of a three-year period. What does that mean, no assets at the beginning of a three-year period?
No assets.
Don't smile with that look. Are 70% more likely to divorce by the end of that period than couples with $10,000 in assets? Boy, $10,000 ain't exactly breaking the bank at Monte Carlo, and you got less than that. $10,000, you're good. All you need is $10,000 at the beginning of a three-year period, and you're pretty solid. So what that says to me is the following. Money, while it is an important aspect to marriage, is not the end-all be-all. All it takes, 10 G's. Many divorce risk factors, such as age and education level, correlate with poverty, says Statistics in Plain English author Timothy Urdan. Whenever you see an explanation for anything, try to figure out what the explanation for those explanations is. Well, I just explained it there, Tim. Number four, if your parents were divorced, you're at least 40% more likely to get divorced than if they weren't. If your parents married others after divorcing, you're 91% more likely to get divorced. You ready for that? So that basically is saying that your modeling says that you can survive the breakup of a marriage. The breakup of a marriage is a natural thing. It happens. And so that's your modeling. So when you get older, you look at the marriage falling apart and you say, well, you know, my parents got divorced. This is what happens, you know, when we're going to get a divorce. If you saw your parents remarry after that, then you're saying to yourself, the modeling is you can survive the breakup of a marriage and find love again. So even more the reason to survive a divorce. See?
I don't get it.
I didn't think you did, man. I'm not going to explain it.
Well, I don't understand about the 91%.
I didn't think you did, and I'm not explaining it. I already just explained it to everybody. All right, here is number five. If only one partner in your marriage is a smoker, you're 75% to 91% more likely to divorce than smokers who are married to fellow smokers. Well, you know, I can see that. Smoking is a real lifestyle choice because you're smoking outside, you're stopping to get cigarettes, you're stopping to have a cigarette. Your spouse sometimes is pressed into service to go get cigarettes. Even if she's tolerant or he's tolerant of your smoking, it's still something that separates you because, oh, excuse me, I got to go have a cigarette. I'm leaving. I'm going outside. I'm smoking. And I'm going to be smoking with all the other smokers, you know. And then, of course, if your spouse is really actively involved in your health, as most spouses are on some level, they're going to be bugging you until the cows come home to quit smoking. It's always going to be like a bummer to see you light up. Oh, there you go again. Do you got to be looking at me all the time with those big moo cow eyes, okay? Why are you smoking? I'm smoking because I want to smoke. You knew it about me before we got married. You thought it was fine. Well, I don't know. Here's another one. Just this is from Phil's little, you know, this is from Phil's treasure trove of facts. If you know a woman or a man, and I should say a woman, if you smoke and you meet a woman who doesn't smoke, but she doesn't, quote, care that you smoke, and she's always got the ashtray ready for you and the matches and the lighter, that ain't going to last, Charlie.
Really?
Nah, it ain't going to last. Number six, if you have a daughter, you're nearly 5% more likely to divorce than if you have a son. If you have a daughter, you're 5% more likely to divorce than if you have a son. Now, this figure multiplies with the numbers of daughters or sons. We think it happens because fathers get more invested in family life when they have boys, says Stephanie Kuntz, author of Marriage, A History, and director of research for the Council on Contemporary Families. So how about that? Men are more invested in family when they have sons, not when they have daughters. What a weird, what a strange thing. What a very, it's just, it's odd. What does that mean? I've never been able to, and perhaps because I've never had kids of my own, not my own biological kids, I've never been able to understand these guys. Well, I sure would like to have a son. I know you'd like to have a son, but maybe you're not going to have a son, okay? Can you live with the fact that you're not going to have a son? Well, I always want to have a son. What you always wanted to have a son? Well, you got a daughter now. Okay?
Yeah, but you don't want to turn her, you don't want to turn her into the butch way or anything.
You're talking about you're going to turn your daughter lesbian. How the hell are you going to turn your daughter lesbian? Why? Because you want to play baseball?
Yeah. You don't want to fish with her and everything. Next thing you know, she's all, you know, dressing like in chino pants and a Panama hat.
You talking about, man? Chino pants and a Panama hat? My daughter?
Yeah.
We'll take a break. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. A video posted on Facebook gets a troop in trouble, some guy, some jackass in Alaska. And we'll tell you why. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
And a Panama hat.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I mean, if I could just explain something here, you know, because Bud was asking me about it.
But you said it was evil and everything.
No, I didn't say it was evil. I said there was a time. There was a time when mankind, after having crawled out of the rocks and the caves, after having crawled out of the trees.
Oh, here we go.
What is this with here we go?
You're going to talk about history and everything.
I got to explain some stuff to you, man. There was a time back in our stupid times, not that we've gotten out of the stupid times, when women, when females were considered to be evil or otherwise the harbinger of weakness. They would bring, you know, if a man allowed himself to be too consumed by a woman, it would drain him of his strength. This was a superstitious time. You understand?
Yeah, but that's, she ate the apple and everything.
Well, who cares if she ate the apple? What are you talking about, the Bible?
Yeah. On account of when the snake said to do it, she didn't even, you know.
Yeah, well, she didn't give a fight or nothing.
What are you, both you guys idiots or something? You're talking about the Bible? All right, first of all, there was a time when man, the civilization viewed women that way. Well, it seems as if, even though we aren't superstitious people any longer, we still view women as somehow not as desirable as to have when they're daughters, you know.
You know, I like women's.
You like women's?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, more than one.
Okay, that's women. You don't have to put an S at the end of it.
Man.
So anyway, if you have a daughter, I just don't understand, and Jason and I were talking about it, why it would be that a man, and I realize it's only 5%, why men would be less invested in a family because they have daughters. I just think for my own, you know, just for my money, it's still one of the, it's just a vestige of that old way of thinking, which, oh, well, shoot, a girl, you know, it's not as good. What do you mean not as good? Especially these days where, you know, the chances your daughter is going to grow up and become a person or in habit of profession that you're going to be really proud of, and then you can sit there and get free tickets to a ball game, or you can, maybe she's going to raise enough money and earn enough money to keep your ass flush for the rest of your life, or who knows, you know. You'll really love having a daughter then. I trust me on that one. Well, I didn't want to have a doctor. Then what happened? She became a doctor, huh? And, oh, well, you know, yeah, things change, don't they? Number four. Well, wait a second. That's, where was I?
Yeah, that's number four. Now number, no, number.
I got it. Don't worry about it. I got it, okay? Number seven. If you're an evangelical Christian adult who has been married, there's a 26% likelihood that you've been divorced, compared to a 28% chance for Catholics and a 38% chance for non-Christians. So you're still at the low end. Good for you. If you're an evangelical Christian adult who has been married, there's a 26% likelihood that you've been divorced. What? So in other words, if we meet a bunch of single people, and some of them are evangelical Christians, and I ask them, were you ever married? Yes. Okay, there's like a 1 in 4 chance you were divorced. It's a statistic that I think somebody really got jazzed about doing this whole thing, and they said, man, I got all those numbers on the divorce. Yeah, I know, Charlie. No, that's fantastic. Hey, look at this one. Just put them over there, okay, man? I'm finishing my lunch. Number eight, if you live in Wayne County, Indiana, and are over 15 years old, there's a 19.2% chance that you've been divorced. Well, how about that? All right. Wayne County, man. I don't understand it either. That's what it says. If you live in Wayne County, Indiana, holy God. There's a 19.2% chance that you've been divorced and you're over 15. The mostly rural county hugging the Ohio River, renowned in the 1920s as a KKK stronghold, leads the nation in percentage of divorced residents. Florida's Monroe County, which includes the Keys, holds second place at 18%. Florida's Keys, 18%. Well, I can't. But you can imagine you living in all that beautiful sunshine. Maybe you just think the pickings are too ripe. Number nine, if both you and your partner have had previous marriages, you're 90% more likely to get divorced than if this had been the first marriage for both of you. So if you and your partner had been married previously, you're 90% more likely to get divorced. That's basically it. Than if this was the first marriage for both of you. Why? Well, because you guys know how easy it is. And it ain't easy, but you know you can get divorced. You know you have that out. You know that you have survived it. You know that it is there for you. And you know that's a reality. And blah, 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 blah. A lot of data shows that second marriages should be more successful than first marriages, says Tara Parker Pope, but this statistic is skewed by serial marriers, and no one has yet found a way to take the Larry Kings and the Elizabeth Taylors out of the equation. So it is skewed heavily by Larry and Elizabeth because they just marry all the time because there's something despicably immoral about them. Yeah, okay, thank you. What do you think of that, Larry? They cited you in this statistic.
Larry, are you talking about Larry King or Larry what?
Larry King.
Oh.
Well, who else?
Larry, the only other one is Larry Fine.
Yeah, I thought about Larry Fine, too.
Larry Fine, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
What?
Larry King, Larry Fine, one of the Three Stooges. In any event, if you're, and here's number 10, if you're a woman 2 or more years older than your husband, your marriage is 53% more likely to end in divorce than if he was 1 year younger to 3 years older. What? Wide age gaps between spouses, just wide gaps, can create sexual discord and other disagreements. Our culture is so focused on personal satisfaction and happiness that some people feel this is a contributing factor in divorce, says lawyer Emily Dork. Yeah, that's her name. Author of Nolo's Existential Guide to Divorce. Each partner keeps saying, I know I could be happier. Number 11, if you are of below average intelligence, you're 50% more likely to be an idiot. No, you're 50% more likely to be divorced than those of above average intelligence. You ready for that, bud?
Well, that makes sense. You're not smart enough to be married.
Well, who says you got to be smart to be married? According to this, though, presented by University of Delaware education professor Linda Gooferson, co-director of the Delaware John Hopkins, blah, 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 blah. This figure joins assertions in Richard Herrnstein and Charles Murray's controversial 1994 bestseller, The Bell Curve, that those with IQs of 100 face a 28% probability of divorce in the first 5 years of marriage, compared to just a 9% probability for those with IQs of 130. So if you're a brain surgeon, maybe you can figure your way out of these problems, you know. You know, if you're smart. If you were married to a smart woman, I was married to a smart woman, and she's still my friend, and Maria, she always had an answer. She'd always say, I know what I can do. I can kick your ass. No, she'd always say, you know, this has happened many times in history, and here's a book I'm reading. She always had those self-help books. I always had a book about Napoleon. She had a book you could use. She had a book that you could use in your life. I had a book about Hitler, and she had a book about, you know, men, Mars, Venus, men, you know, that jazz.
Outer space.
Yeah, outer space.
What?
877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show, coming right back. Rod Spadeen next hour.
Phil Hendry.
What do you mean?
The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Pardon me, I'm still trying to log on to my own website. We had a problem tonight.
I was able to go, but I used another different one.
What do you mean you used another different one?
You got like a different password.
How many passwords have you got, man?
Just the two you gave me.
Listen, man, when I give you one password, okay, you, me, and Robert, we share that, okay? You don't hold on to another one. What'd you do? You told me you lost it and you didn't?
No, I lost it, but then I, well...
If you lost it, you lost it. Don't tell me you lost it and you get another password from me and I got like 58 passwords running around out there. I'm trying to log on to my website tonight. We had a problem with our server. We had what's called an authentication problem. And everybody is on and everybody is watching the video cast and everybody's cool except for me. I can't see diddly squat.
I can.
Well, isn't that just great? Because I can't. Let me see.
No.
Why not?
Because you... You got to have a password that works to be able to see.
Look at this guy. He picks up his laptop and walks away.
Can't look at it.
877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show. So, Annie, like I said, we had this problem, so I'm just waiting to see if anybody wants to give me the heads up on what's the story here, man. You know, like, how, you know, can I log on to my own website? Would that be, is that too much of a problem? Wow. Anyway, our website is philhendryshow.com. Go over there. You can watch live streaming video and listen to live audio and watch the just watch everything. Listen to everything. The whole world is there, man. And speaking of that, we had a press release. Well, I told you the press release yesterday that we've released. In the middle of a recession, our web business is up 20%. Now, the reason why I brought that up to you is if you guys are business owners, if you guys, you know, you're just sweating this recession out like we all are, just forget about it, man. Just... Give people something that they want, and they're going to buy it. Give them something they want, and they'll buy it. In this case, we give them a radio show, we give them archives, and we give them an approach to radio that's unique. It isn't like, it's not brain surgery, just give them a little something different. You know, I'm not going to sit here and do the typical kind of radio show. We give somebody something different to listen to, something different to watch. And they will, you know.
It's like in that movie in the movie about, you know, in a baseball movie.
Yeah.
What baseball movie, man?
The one that if you make it, they'll come.
If you build it, yeah. Field of Dreams.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, great. Students KKK robe stunned Georgia high school. Well, how about that? In Dahlonega, Georgia, you know, I used to live around Atlanta, and I should recognize this name, and I should be able to pronounce it. Dahlonega, forgive me if I'm pronouncing this incorrectly, but then again, you guys don't really want me to pronounce it correctly, do you? Considering the fact that you had Klan robes running around town lately? I mean, I'm kidding. Anyway, Catherine Ariema wanted to teach her students a lesson about racism in U.S. history, but she got a little more than she bargained for. The Georgia high school teacher unwittingly created an uproar when she let her students walk through the school last week wearing white Ku Klux Klan robes as part of a class assignment. Without warning, students at Lumpkin County High School watched in shock as four students entered the high school cafeteria dressed head to toe in what is perhaps the most potent and frightening symbol of hate in American history. It turned out that Ariema's class was filming a scene involving the Klan as part of a video project, but many say the historical reenactment hit too close to home. I was outraged, 18-year-old senior Cody Ryder, who is mixed race, told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on Monday. I was mad, so I started walking to them. Ariema, who's white, told the Associated Press when they realized the effect the robes had on their peers, her students were upset as well.
In Dahlonega, at least, which is about 90% white, many agree that REM's historical reenactment, or at least the way it was executed, was the wrong way to go. Students and parents complained, and now the advanced placement U.S. history teacher is on administrative leave with pay and could lose her job. Good Lord. Lumpkin County Superintendent Dewey Moy said REM's lesson was not thought out. We determined, obviously, that she used extremely poor judgment, Moy told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, in my opinion. It was offensive, but the incident is made more complex by the fact that REM's intent was not to endorse racism, but teach about its perils. And REM, a sixth-year award-winning teacher, said the issue must be confronted head-on. This is what Kathy REM said. She said, "You cannot discuss racism without discussing the Klan. To do so would be to condone their actions." But Lynn Hoag, a law professor at Georgia State University, said REM should have notified students and teachers about the reenactment before it took place. The answer is not necessarily to not do it, but rather to be sure that everybody is reasonably informed about it so that people aren't caught off guard and it doesn't backfire. Well, I got to agree with the, you know, I'm the first guy to defend teachers and an award-winning teacher and a teacher that cares so much about her students and about education and about history. You really hate to see somebody. I hope they don't fire her. But let me, you know how we always say that in America, even the brightest people are really stupid when it comes to race?
Yeah, you said that one time.
Yeah. Well, it's true. It's true. And I hate to say this, but the stupidest are the whites. Now, I know I get all kinds of people pissed off at me, and I don't care because I happen to be right. I don't want to be right, and I don't take great joy in being right, but I am. I'm right. White people, everybody is really stupid when it comes to race to begin with, but white people are at the bottom of at the back of the class. Even the brightest white people are so stupid when it comes to race and what it means in this society that you want to cry. They're so stupid, you can't explain anything to them. Black people are only maybe a couple of degrees higher on the overall scholastic achievement when it comes to, you know, knowledge of race, racial interaction, so forth. History, especially history. Whites, dumb. And proof positive is this teacher, a damn good teacher, a great teacher, but she's sitting there with all these white people, and she said, let's go ahead and slap on the Klan robes and have kids walking around, and she doesn't understand that a black kid sees that, a black adult sees that, and that is a very traumatic thing to see. Now, whites are so dumb that a lot of times they'll say the following thing, oh, why don't they get over it? And I'm not even going to get into it, but that this is proof to me. Now, I'm sorry, and I will, like I said, I'm not giving everybody a pass. Black people aren't all that educated when it comes to race either. But you can't explain a damn thing to a dumb white when it comes to race. And what do I mean by a dumb white? That could be somebody who has an IQ of 130. It could be Rush Limbaugh. In fact, to be perfectly honest with you, Rush is a very smart guy, but when it comes to racial issues, he's as stupid as anybody. I'm just using him as an example. Same thing with Keith Oberfuhrer. He's a dumbass, too. And I'll bet you that guy, probably, if they stuck his brain inside like a brain machine, or if they, I don't know what they do with guys like Oberman. What do they do?
They probably put him like in a machine, and they measure the size of the brain and everything.
Yeah. I'll bet you, Oberman, if they stuck you in one of those brain-sized machines, you probably are like from another planet or something. That's how smart you are. But when it comes to race, you're about as dumb as the day is long, man. So let that be a lesson to you. And I don't know. I mean, I may not be the brightest bulb on the tree, but I can tell you this much. If I was down in Georgia, okay?
Yeah.
And they said, Mr. Henry, would you mind taking over this class that Ms. REM is sick today? And
why would you do that?
Well, let's say I'm an assistant teacher or something.
Well, where are you? Do you have a show, too?
Will you forget about my radio show for a minute?
No, man. He said he's a teacher. Oh, you're pretending.
Yes, I'm pretending. Let's say I'm a teacher. Okay?
All right.
And they asked me to fill in for Mrs. Ariema.
Okay. Am I in a class, or?
You got nothing to do with it, bud, okay? You're not in the class, neither's Robert, all right?
All right.
And I fill in for Mrs. REM, and I say, all right, Mr. Henry, you're filling in for today's history class. Mrs. REM, she's out sick.
What's wrong with her?
I'm going to belt you, man, in a minute.
Will you shut up, man?
What's wrong with her? So, and then they say, oh, you know, Mrs. Ariema she had a lesson today, and it was to dress these kids up in a Klan outfit, and you guys walk over to the cafeteria dressed as Klan, sit down, have soup, a burger, maybe some fries, talk, chit-chat, compare iPhones, and then...
What would you do?
I'd tell him, no dice, Jack, no dice.
Man, you'd get in trouble, though.
Well, I wouldn't get in trouble. I'd tell him, no way am I doing that. No way do I want to die. I'm going to dress those guys up in a Klan suit and walk over to the cafeteria? Not a chance.
What about Miss Ariema class? She's going to have them kids, and they're going to get an F.
I don't give a damn about her class. If she comes back, I'll have to say, Mrs. Ariema, with all due respect, I couldn't lead those kids over in a bed sheets, okay? I'm sorry.
Yeah, but what'd you do instead?
What do you mean, what did I do instead? Maybe I sat down, maybe we had a discussion. Maybe I kept the kids in the Klan outfit there in the classroom and we discussed it there. There's no way I'd do it. I just, like I said, I ain't the brightest bulb on the tree. I may not be the sharpest tool in the shed.
You got an elevator and doesn't go all the way to the top floor.
It doesn't go all the way to the top floor, but I ain't anything I'm going to do. Let me tell you what. All right. But anyway, it's so cool, man, to have teachers that care, you know? God, it's just, it's a drag. It's a bummer. And for some reason, I don't know why I read this. I'll tell you why. When I first read this thing, I read this story and I thought they were kindergartners or something. Because I couldn't believe that a high school teacher would do this. I thought, well, maybe this is some kind of dress-up for little kids. But then again...
Yeah, but that'd be just as potently bad.
Not really.
Why not?
Because of a little tiny kid, a little black kid, he sees somebody a bedsheet, he's just going to think it's somebody a bedsheet, see?
Oh, yeah, on account of he never had a cross burned on his front lawn?
No, man, he don't even own a house.
What are you guys talking about? I was saying that they wouldn't do this in a high school, and when I first read this, I thought it was little kids because it was a dress-up thing, and I thought it was maybe some ill-informed or ill-advised dress-up thing. All right, 877-876-PHIL is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I got another list for you, man. This one's beautiful. This is about fast food dishes that suck. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Phil. All right, now here's a very interesting story we got for you. And as a matter of fact, and I don't know if we'll be able to do it. I got Chase working on this. Now, do you know what's for sale? It's the Amityville Horror House, bud.
I'm not familiar with it because that's a long time ago. I'm not familiar.
Bull crap, because I saw you watching a movie the other night.
Yeah, but I don't know about the house.
Well, they're selling the Amityville Horror House. Now, this was an actual house. I know many of you are probably familiar with the house from the movies and the books and all this. And they're selling it. Now, the so-called haunted house that chilled moviegoers in 1979's The Amityville Horror is on the market for $1.15 million. Yeah, you bet it is.
Well, why do you think that's significant?
It's significant because if it's so damn haunted... And if it's so full of ghosts and spooks and everybody else, 1.15, somebody thinks they're going to pull a nice piece of change for this joint. And I'll tell you something else about, you know, here in California, 1.15, this is going to shock you, but 1.15, it doesn't necessarily get you a hell of a lot of house. Now, hold on for a minute. Jace, what did you just put? Here, look at this. The median house price around the area is $500,000 to $550,000. Well, those are the comps. Are you kidding me? That's the comps? So somebody put it on the market for double what they're getting in that neighborhood. Why? Because somebody's going to come along and pay it.
Yeah, but what about the fact the man killed everybody?
Oh, quit. What a baby.
Oh, man, you don't start to cry?
Yeah, but a guy killed people.
Yeah, so he did. So what? The so-called haunted house, here's the reason why it's haunted, or why people say it's haunted. It was the place where Ronald DeFeo murdered six family members as they slept in 1974, a crime that reportedly haunted the home's subsequent owners, George and Kathleen Lutz, and spawned the 1977 bestseller, The Amityville Horror, A True Story. James Cromarty, age 77, bought the house in 1977. By that point, a bank had foreclosed on the house from the Lutzes, who have since died.
DeFeo is in the upstate Greenhaven Correctional Facility serving 25 years to life for the murders. This guy's still around?
Why isn't he in a nut house?
You got to pack that guy away in dry ice, man. What do you mean at the Greenhaven facility? Put him in the nut house. Nothing weird ever happened except for people coming by because of the book and the movie, said Cromarty, who lived a decade in the house. He and his wife, Barbara, sold the house in 1987 to Peter and Jeannie O'Neill. They reached on Monday. Jeannie O'Neill said, I loved it. It was a beautiful home. They sold the house in 1997 for $310,000 to the current owner, which records identify as Brian Wilson. That's right, of the Beach Boys. No, it isn't of the Beach Boys.
It could be.
No, it's not. It's a different Brian Wilson. There's another Brian Wilson. There's a Brian Wilson that works for Fox News.
Maybe it's him.
Or maybe it's just a guy named Brian Wilson. It's got nothing to do with him or the Beach Boys. According to the listing agent, Laura Zambradio of Daniel Gale Sotheby's International Realty, it's one of the more beautifully redone houses in the neighborhood. Now, the home has been remodeled in the last 3 decades, and the original address, 112 Ocean Avenue, was even changed by previous owners James and Barbara Cromarty to protect their privacy, which is very, very common, by the way. They've changed the addresses of a lot of houses, including when it was actually still standing, the home of Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate. That house has since been bulldozed, but when it was still standing, they actually changed the address because there were too many creeps coming by, you know, bothering people. So now, Amityville real estate agent Jerry O'Neill, a Coldwell banker, Harbor Light, told Newsday he believes the house is fairly priced and would make a beautiful family home. Get a load of that.
Why is that significant?
If the comps, according to my producer, Jace, if the comps are around 5 to 550.
What do you mean by comp?
The comparable prices.
All right.
Are 5 to 550. I don't know, man. And these cats are looking for 1.15. I think they, you know, obviously these owners are not completely stupid. This is the Amityville Horror House. We might be able to get a nice piece of change.
Yeah, but people might say, I don't want to be in it on account of the man who killed everybody and everything.
Look at Bud. Let me just explain something to you, okay?
Yeah, man, look at all the people who owned it.
Exactly. Here's a guy that kills his whole family. 6 people as they slept, right?
Yeah, it's creepy.
Really? It's creepy, huh? Well, the Lutzes buy it because I guess maybe they didn't know, or maybe they did. There's a law now here in California and probably elsewhere. You must disclose the history of the house, especially if it has, if any kind of a violent crime has been committed in it. All right. So now the Lutzes buy it. They claim that they're all creeped out and they're weirded out and all kinds of spooks and ghosts come out and bug them and they flee the home and the book is written and oh my God, right? Right. Now along comes James Cromarty. He buys the house in 1977, and he lives in that place for 10 years, and he doesn't see any ghosts. He doesn't get bugged. He remodels the place. And then along comes Jeannie and Peter O'Neill. They buy it. They remodel it. They love the hell out of it. They sell it in 1997 for $310,000, and they sell it to the current owner, Brian Wilson. So he's owned it for 12 years, and now it's on the market. Now, and I guess he hasn't been interviewed by anybody, but the point that I'm trying to make here is obviously the Lutzes were the only family that got weirded out by this guy DeFeo. Everybody else had a good time there. Now,
well, you don't know if they had a good time. What do you mean a good time?
What I'm saying is, man, nobody went fleeing out of the house because of a ghost. What does that tell you?
Well.
Exactly. Now, I'm on Google Maps, and I'm looking at the house. It actually borders a beautiful, it looks like a finger of water, like almost like one of these little rivers or man-made river or a man-made canal. It borders that. There's an island that's in the middle of this canal. It's right there in the middle of, I should say, on the southern coast or the southern shore of Long Island. And if I just open the map up a little bit, I can tell you exactly where. It's about a quarter of the way up the island, about a quarter of the way up the island from New York City on the southern shore. The comps are for $550,000. The sale price is $1.15 million. That tells me that Brian Wilson, whoever he is, either he's a Beach Boy, the guy from Fox News, or just some guy named Brian Wilson, he's going to try to make hay while the sun shines, man.
Yeah, but how does he know he's going to get that kind of money?
Because if you get the press out on this thing, hey, the Amityville Horror House, ooh, okay? How do you think we all know it's the Amityville Horror House?
I don't know.
Because somebody, you know, is blabbering it. And if you're Brian Wilson, the owner of the house, you better damn well know that he wants people to say that. Because it's a big deal, right? You want to own the Amityville Horror House. Amityville Real Estate, Jerry O'Neill. Okay, we told you that thing. So it's a gorgeous big center hall colonial with a finished basement. Nothing spooky about it. Yeah. It's not the only notorious Long Island house on the market, by the way. Recently, the East Meadow expanded ranch where serial killer Joel Rifkin used to live, sometimes bringing victims back to the house, was listed for $424,000. That's a pretty strange set of, but again, it also has to do with the size of the house, you know, and really what we should be talking about here is square footage. Dr. Michael Stone, by the way, is going to be with us on Friday for Crime Night, and he's going to discuss the DeFeo murder case, okay? So we'll get more into that with him. We might even ask Dr. Stone how much he'd pay for this house and what he thinks the car, I'm just kidding. All right, coming up is Raj Fineen, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Dr. Stone's a real estate agent?
No, he's not.
Phil Hendry.